Anyway, we're going to go into our first interview for the program. So we're joined today by Madhavi Srivanathan, who is part of Hindus for Human Rights, and we have her on the program to talk about the Indian elections, which are currently happening right now. So good morning, Madhavi.
Morning, Jacob. Thank you for inviting me.
Yeah, so Madhavi, can you start off by, just especially for our listeners, can you give a bit of a background to the general elections in India, which has been taking place from April 19th to June 1st?
Yeah, sure. The current Indian general election is the 18th one since independence in 1947. There are over 740 parties, 8,000 candidates, including independents, for 543 seats in the parliament and nearly a billion eligible voters. So it's massive. The elections are on right now through seven phases. We've completed six phases. The last one is on June 1st, and the results will be announced on 4th of June. And there's a lot of movement of election machinery, security, poll observers across 1 million polling stations. The turnout of voters, I would say, in the last six phases has been lower than the previous elections, broadly attributed to preoccupations by voters on cost of living, voter apathy, and a very harsh summer heat across India, which has probably acted as a deterrent also.
And that actually leads into you've made reference to this, I guess, but can you tell us a bit more about some of the political issues that are kind of driving kind of this election? I mean, you mentioned cost of living, but what are some of the others that are kind of really operating in the background, especially in terms of what parties are actually kind of, in a sense, advocating for?
Yeah. I think in order to answer this, I have to go a little bit back in history to talk about the constitution, which was adopted in 1950 by India, what we would say is a progressive constitution, with a good framework for democracy and secures for all its citizens justice, liberty, and equality. It also took into account the diversity of languages, religion, cultures, customs, and provided for pluralism. So this is what has kept the Indian democracy alive, I should say, through the last 77 years of independence. What happened in 2014 was a turning point. Nearly after 50 years of Congress engaged in the power politics in Delhi, they lost power. BJP came into power with a strong promise of rooting out corruption. In their second term in 2019, however, they largely focused on promoting the core ideology of Hindutva or Hindu nationalism. Alongside, they also pushed for one election across India and more oversight over states, basically going away from the constitution. The 2024 elections are happening amidst very deep polarization within the country, based on religion and caste, and clashes between the ambition of a national government and aspirations of states, that especially those in East and South that have made significant progress. Observers and activists are concerned about minority rights, freedom of the press, and the right to expression and dissent by citizens. Issues of inequality, widespread unemployment among youth, cost of living, these are still major issues. BJP had assumed that the Ram Temple in Ayodhya, which was built in January, for which there was widespread support, would give them a lot of traction. But it doesn't seem to have happened that way. Voters are engaged in other issues. Vulnerable households have still not recovered from the impact of demonetization, which happened in 2016, when 85% of currency was made illegal overnight. BJP's second term, there has been a lot of religious and cultural minorities have had a lot taken a hit in the government policies, particularly whether in Kashmir, Manipur, or Ladakh. Lynching of Muslim youth for cow protection by local BJP workers, laws against interreligious marriages in some northern states, Bulldozers are used as collective punishment against Muslim communities if there is an unrest. And then there has been other issues, you know, like the electoral bond scheme, which was actually looking at campaign financing, but done entirely anonymously and introduced by BJP. The Supreme Court in India, the highest court, actually put a stop to it, saying this is unconstitutional. But it seems like BJP has been the largest beneficiary of these bonds. They have clamped down on Indians to dissent by weaponizing the existing anti-terrorism and anti-corruption laws. They have been hardly debated in the parliament but hurriedly passed. Civil society is stymied through tightened rules on accepting donations. Many agencies, civil society agencies, have scaled down their operations. And gender-based violence has surged, especially in BJP-run states. And physical and digital violence are a hallmark of the Hindu nationalist targeting of minority women. So you have a cauldron of issues that have come out in these elections, which have already been simmering at the on the surface. Overall, I think, depending on where you are, depending on which state you are in India, and depending on your access to information and education levels, the voters in southern and eastern have kept to very well informed, and more or less the BJP-run states have followed the BJP's rhetoric. So that's where we are right now.
Yeah, and that actually gets me to kind of another question before I ask a more specific question a bit about the BJP is... just in terms of this election, because I'm aware that within Indian politics, there is obviously this obvious divide that kind of exists between the states. The divide between the northern sort of states, i.e. what is described as the Hindi belt, but also the kind of southern states, which are generally not BJP dominated. So what can you tell us about that sort of dynamic in terms of the election?
Yes, you are right, Jacob, that there is this, what I would say is the division, but it's a very historical division. It's not like BJP came and it happened. It has been traditionally that way, particularly in the South, where regional parties take over much more than what I would say is Congress, which was the national party. So there, Congress has not been elected down South for years. Similarly, in the East part, like West Bengal and other places, it has been more... non-BJP or non-central parties, I would say. Now, this has become much more acute in the last, particularly the last term, because after the demonetization, the GST was introduced by BJP. Hence, the revenue has been going to the center, which is supposed to be transferring the revenue back to the states. Now, states which are progressive, states which have moved forward in their economy and education levels are contributing a lot to the pot. But it seems like there's a lot of debate about these, transfer of funds. So that's one flashpoint. The other one is the language issue. Particularly in the southern states, Hindi is not spoken as a language. India has, as you know, many major languages. Constitution recognizes 14 or so languages. So there is this language issue, which also causes the division between focusing on Hindi versus focusing on regional languages plus, we would say. So this is another major area. And the third is the South has not had the experiences that the North has had as far as the invasion of the Mughals was concerned or the British. So the experience of the people in the South and the welcoming of other cultures is much more. So there's a lot of inclusivity in the South. Similarly in the East. So you would find the divisions have now come out more politically because the southern area is seen as being nurturing and inclusive. Whereas the BJP-led central states have an issue with, both the religion and caste, all of these is acute.
And that's a good segue into the kind of next question, which is... very much going into the kind of role that the BJP are playing, because very much the concerns I hear from a lot of progressive Indians about the BJP is the fact that what the BJP is kind of representing is, in a sense, almost a complete, a direct threat to kind of Indian democracy. And I guess I want to kind of hear about what can you tell us about. We've been hearing reports, in fact, I even watched a recent ABC news story on this, of like anti-democratic actions from the ruling BJP party. And it wasn't just happening prior to the election, it's also been happening during the whole electoral process.
Yeah, Jacob, I think you are right. And yes, I saw the ABC report about that. One of the most important things is the current election commission, which oversees the elections, has been appointed by the ruling party. So this is a very unusual thing. You know, usually it has an independent voice, but all the members of the election commission have been appointed by the ruling party. The provision of a neutral voice in the election commission has actually been done away with. A critical feature of democracy as a result has been compromised, and it seemed to be compromised. Some local BJP candidates have urged people to vote for them, claiming that an absolute majority is the only way to rewrite the national constitution. This is very alarming. These actions have not been condemned by the BJP, although the PM in his speeches has upheld the constitution. So there is a lot of, clash of narratives that's happening within BJP. At a lower level, the cadres are allowed to do these things while the PM would say something else. Then there is active instances of intimidation of Muslim voters, violence and threats by local BJP workers in polling booths. That's what ABC had also reported. I think they had received some videos of some Muslim majority constituencies in North Indian states where Muslims are prevented from voting. They have been intimidated and harassed. Mainstream media is now literally a propaganda machinery for the ruling party. So they would barely provide coverage of opposition rallies and announcements. So the BJP has made very savvy use of that and the social media to propagate its agenda and to troll the political critics. And meanwhile, as you and I know, there are instances of repression even against international journalists, such as Avni Diaz from ABC and French freelance journalist Vanessa Dunant, whose visas were not renewed due to their coverage of the real situation in India. It was seen as hostile, so they have eased off these journalists. Several social media accounts seen as critical of BJP have been shut down. Hindus for Human Rights, for instance, the Twitter and YouTube accounts have been removed in India, so it's no longer accessible there. Opposition parties, too, are under pressure. Two sitting chief ministers, what you would call as premiers in Australia, were arrested just before the elections and slapped with charges under the revised money laundering laws. The Congress party's accounts were frozen, so they had to rush to the court to release them because otherwise they would not have campaigning finances at all. So you are talking about small actions leading up to larger ripple effects, where the BJP is consistently chipping away, particularly to consolidate their gains in the North Indian states, in the West Indian states, and hopefully make inroads into South and East. Let's see what happens. I mean, we will know enough on June 4th how this is going to pan out.
One of our other presenters actually had another question he wanted to ask.
Good morning, Madhavi.
This
is Zane. I'm interested. You mentioned at the start of the interview this heat wave, and there was an article in the ABC online saying that temperatures had reached 52.9 degrees at the Mungeshpur weather station on the outskirts of Delhi. How is that playing into the election, and more broadly? I visited the Philippines many years ago, and this climate denialism that we have in Australian politics was just not a feature of Filipino politics at all. And I imagine it's much the same in India. This people don't try and deny climate change there. I'm interested in how that plays out, because I know that the BJP have tried to spruik their environmental credentials and pro-renewables and all this kind of stuff. How do progressive left and communist parties relate to the question of climate change differently to the BJP?
In fact, I actually wouldn't say I'm very well informed, but I will give you some parts of what I am noticing with the campaigning across all parties. Climate change is not an issue at all, except that Rahul Gandhi, in some of his speeches, has made references to the fact that because of that, there is likelihood of impact on livelihoods and living conditions and everything. It hasn't been a very major feature across any of the parties. Yes, the left parties would focus more on it, but I don't think their voices are as loud as, for instance, definitely BJP's or of the Congress and its allies, which are all in an alliance called the India Alliance. So as a result, what's happening is this particular election, due to the polarization that I mentioned earlier, and the acknowledgement that, yes, the summer heat, Election Commission has made all sorts of provisions. Like, they've said, ha, we've put coolers in these centers, we've got water for the people who are standing in the queue, et cetera, and not more than 1,500 voters per polling booth in the 1 million polling booths. That's how they are dealing with it. But it still doesn't mean that 52 degrees is going to affect them. But it's not about, nobody's thinking about the long term. There's so much fight going on right now about who said what and what sort of hate speech can I give for the other or put down the other party that people are not focusing, particularly from BJP, it seems, about the real issues of climate change and other renewables. There may be very good policies. I mean, we must acknowledge that, yes, India has, and in the last 10, 15 years, particularly in the last 5, 6 years, has done a lot of work at a technical level, but I don't think it has widespread reach, and I don't think people are talking about climate change.
Well, just to jump in and also kind of asking the kind of conclusion question as well, I just want to make a kind of quick comment. I guess one of the things I kind of observed when I was in India a few years ago, when I was in Himachal Pradesh, I remember noticing like a lot of like posters of like Modi with generally, and he was generally positioned with the politicians in that particular state. And my partner had sort of translated the sort of writing on it. And generally the trend I sort of noticed on that was basically Modi would sort of position himself as like, you know, look at what my government is doing. We're bringing modern renewables to the people of Himachal kind of Pradesh. But of course the contradiction with the government, with the Modi and the BJP government is this is also the same government that is propping up someone like Adani, who is also who's investing in massive amounts of coal mines, but also doing land clearance of peasants from their land to make make room for even renewable energy or other sort of infrastructure or even more mining. So I think that's kind of like one of the contradictions I think with politics in India I've noticed on the climate question.
Absolutely. The question is that there is one constant thing with BJP, which is putting Modi as a guarantee for everything. That's the main feature. But the rest of it is they move on from one rhetoric to the other, and they would be contradicting their own statements. So, for instance, if you talk about renewables, and yes, on the other hand, Adani will be promoted. So this is the, you know, refrain that we have been noticing for the last decade about this party. India is a land of contradictions because of its massiveness. So we're not saying it's unique, but it's become acute. So people are promised one thing and then they quickly move on to distracting them and promising them something else. So, but in every single rhetoric, you would find Modi as the guarantee. That's what the party puts forward, even in this election, completely.
Madhavi, I'd also be interested on the question of Palestine-Israel, because I know that the BJP government, Modi, are close to Israel. There's been arms deals, all the sort of stuff that you have here in the US between the sort of ruling government. Is this on the electoral radar during the general election? And is there much Palestine solidarity action happening in India?
Visibly, I am not sure about people showing Palestinian solidarity through what I mean is coming onto the streets and stuff like that. But there's a lot happening in social media where people are there is a group which is educating itself, in fact, in order to understand this issue better. It started off very strongly with anti-Palestine rhetoric in India through social media, which was actively pumped out, and a lot of support for Israel and whatever happened, which has happened. Now, I think things have settled down a lot more from what I see in social media, I would say, where people are starting to debate about this issue, reading much better and coming out and challenging views which are, hey, come on, what about Hamas or what about October 7th? Saying no, talk about the 50 years or 76 years of what happened. So I think it's largely among the middle class. There is no, like I said, the vulnerable communities, which is a large mass of people, are hardly able to keep their ends together. So they're not going to be, and many of them have gone to Israel. They've been sent, as you know, from Haryana, I think people have gone, is because they want work. They're desperate. So the whole focus in India is, thankfully, India supported the Palestine solution for the state in the 80s. So they're not going to walk back on it, which is the best thing that happened. But whether they're actively supporting Palestinians, I'm not so sure about it.
Well, that gets into the, we just got to wrap up the kind of interview now. Is there kind of any kind of concluding comments you would like to make? And actually, if you have any comments also to make on the BJP's Islamophobic rhetoric over the course of election, that would also be an interesting thing to kind of conclude on, if you would like to comment.
Yeah, in fact, there has been a lot of comments centering mainly around the Congress election manifesto, especially by the Prime Minister, saying that Congress would take away property and resources from the Hindus and distribute it to the Muslims, or the Muslims will be given priority in reservations. None of this is mentioned in the Congress manifesto. I think the purpose of this rhetoric seems to be to keep the BJP's voting base, you know, keep them with them, and then trivialize the Congress manifesto. The Prime Minister walked back on some of these comments by saying, no, he referred to poor people and not Muslims. So that keeps going on. And of course, the BJP cadres are going to town on anti-Muslim rhetoric, songs, rap, music, all of that is going on down the field. I feel whichever way the election goes and whoever comes to power, for instance, the major national and regional parties, the opposition parties, have made an alliance called India Alliance and are attempting to force debates on inequality, rising unemployment and inflation. Whichever way this comes to power, there is a lot of work to do to protect the democracy that was intact for so many years. People have organized themselves. There are young influencers. There are digital activists with alternative narratives. They all have now a sizable following. Even if the mainstream arena is closed for them, they've gone on to YouTube and other places. Let's hope this reach expands and stays on air, because more people are getting engaged. India cannot be controlled by a single narrative for too long. History has recorded that ordinary citizens are forgiving up to a point, but have the capacity to make up their own mind. And in the long run, communities do not want to support divisive politics because they know it doesn't benefit them. So our task doesn't stop with this election if we want democracy to survive in India. So we have to keep working on it.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Amanhibi. I think this has actually been a very informative interview for our listeners, and in fact covering such a great sort of a range of kind of issues in relation to the kind of Indian elections. And yeah, I think for all of us who are on the left, I think we are hoping that the BJP don't win, or at least they don't get a large enough majority that they're able to really cover carry out the full their full kind of program, because in a sense it's almost as fearful as the fact that probably Trump will probably get of getting a second term in the United States.
Thank you very much for giving me this opportunity.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. Bye.
Bye.